Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can email me at my email address at bonkaye@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Tonight, I will be joined by my co-hostess, Suzette Fernand, who hasn't made it on yet, but she'll be here shortly, I'm sure. So in the meantime, I would like to mention several things. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about our upcoming healing weekend for the first weekend in October, October 3rd and 4th. I'm really excited about this weekend because it always proves to be such a validating event for so many of our women. Many of you have never met another woman who's going through this. And, of course, I'm able to hook you up with some online support, but it's very different than actually meeting people in person who have shared your struggles and share your journey. And it's a very unique experience because most people don't have the opportunity to meet others who are in this situation. So it's a Saturday and Sunday, but some people from out of town come in by Friday and don't leave till Monday. And it's a time for sharing, for caring, to exchange stories. We have workshops. I'm going to have a young lady who will talk about being the daughter of you know, coming from a straight gay marriage and all the problems that brought out for her and things that she has to have had, things that she's overcome in her own life. So I'm really excited about that. And we'll be having some other counselors and therapists coming there to work on the healing process with you. And, of course, you know, I'll be there to give all of you the support you need as you're moving ahead. Also, some people would like to see some of the sites in Philadelphia, and that will be good, too, because I'll be happy to show you around my city and spend as much time with you that I can before and after the program. We have a wonderful group rate for this, so if you are interested, please let me know. That area code, well, no, you just write to me at bondk@AOL. I'm thinking you should call me. Don't, no, you can just write to me and I'll send you the details, and that'll be better for you. There's no cost for this. This is my gift to our women once a year that I like to do, and the only expense you're going to have is that of the hotel. We do have a group rate. And also for dinner for one night, which contributes to the room that we'll be meeting in. And it's a beautiful hotel. It's right by the airport. So if you're coming in from out of town, the shuttle bus is 5 minutes from where you'll be going. So please write to me. You know, the first come, we'll get underway there. You know, we only have a limited amount of space. I never like to turn anyone away. But in order for this to be effective, it's for people who really need to be on that road to healing. So without further ado, I believe Suzette is with us. Hold on one moment. Suzette, is that you?
It's me. How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
First of all, Suzette, so happy to have you here. I want to have a special shout out to one of your big fans, Debbie in Texas. Deborah is one of our inspirations in our, you know, support group, and she was telling me that she's so excited that you're going to be on tonight because you're always so inspirational to her. So, Deborah, mm-hmm. We're sending you our love from me and from Suzette, right?
Oh, indeed. Thank you so much. That makes my evening.
Well, it's the truth, and plenty of other people, too, but, you know, she made a note of it tonight to me, so I just wanted to, you know, send that message to you. So, Suzette, you have something new going on, and I'm really excited about it. I'm glad you were able to spend a little time tonight talking about it, because let's tell people a little bit about your situation now. You are newly remarried, right?
Yes, I am. We got married in December of 2014, so... But we're at 4 months strong.
That's a really good start. But I do want to let people, well, it is. You know, it's the sand and the pebble, but you know, sand on the shore, whatever they call it, sand on the beach. But the thing is that it's the beginning, it's something new, it's something fresh. But I don't want people to get the wrong impression. Because in case they haven't heard you before, don't know your story, this was nothing that you jumped into.
No.
This is nothing that you rushed. This is something you really took your time before you made this move, correct?
That's true. And for the listeners who don't know the story, I'll give you the Cliff Note version. This is my third time getting married. The first two times were to the same man, and he happened to be gay. And after the first time... You know, I was devastated, but I was in a rush to just hurry and get out of it. And after the second time, I kind of felt so stupid, so crazy that I did it a second time that I felt like I needed therapy, I needed a psychiatrist, I needed everything because I could not completely understand, as I look back, I couldn't understand why I married him a second time, but... As Bonnie,
well, Susan, can we clarify that a little bit? Because a lot of women have that same struggle. First of all, to be really clear, you did grow up in a very Christian home, right?
Yeah, exactly. And as I was saying that you had pointed out to me that you understood exactly why that would happen because of the way I was raised and the belief system that I was raised with that really was very rigid and also was very ignorant. When it came to men, even though my father was in the home, my mother and father stayed married for 40-something years until he passed, he still did not teach us about men. He and my mother both spent so much time working that my younger sister and I were practically raised by our older sister. So a father outside the home and growing up in a very highly religious, Pentecostal holiness tradition, I did not know about me, and I didn't even really know about myself, to be honest with you. And so I just felt like sex was just sex. I had heard that to men sex was different, that it was more of a drive, and I did not understand the emotional implications and the orientation piece. I just thought it was sex, and that if he was having sex with a man, it was just sex. So why couldn't a man decide that he was in love with me and wanted to have sex with me? Well, you all kind of know what's coming up now. It's like, well, you know, that's not the way it went. That's not the way it was. And so to say it was a very devastating time in my life is to make it an understatement. I really am in awe that I am okay, not just okay, not that I just got through it, that I was able to reclaim everything that was lost as a result of it. And for that, I am so grateful. And it makes this third marriage even that much more special because he's a fantastic man. I mean a fantastic man in so many wonderful ways, and even in the smallest ways. Even when he doesn't even know he's doing it, he's healing a part of me and helping me to recover at least another piece of my soul. So I am very, very grateful. And so this 4 months has been incredible.
Would it be fair to say that after the second time you got married, and once again, I just want to emphasize to women, because a lot of our women come from a Christian background, and they definitely struggle with this, is that, you know, they took a vow before God, you know, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. And, you know, they try to say, well, this is a sickness, so how can I walk out? How can I leave him? You know, they really struggle with their vows. And my heart goes out to them, but I really do believe that this was not the way it was intended, that, you know, God would never want a woman to have to struggle like this. But it's so easy to understand why people, when they're so highly influenced. We have women in our group who are married to pastors, all kinds of men who are high up in different positions in the church. And, you know, it's embarrassing to them where they feel that people will judge that or even blame them, that, you know, your husband was an outstanding man. He had children with you. He's a father to your children. He wasn't gay when he married you. You know, once again, internalizing maybe they've done something wrong, which we know has nothing to do with it. But it's not unusual for, you know, you really had a lack of knowledge with this. Because like you said, you were brought up in an environment where there wasn't much to reach out to. And then when you found out, there wasn't much out there anyway. So it wouldn't be unlikely to think that God can change everything. And when he came back to you and said, God has changed me, it didn't sound that unrealistic, right?
Not at all, because, I mean, even to this day, I believe God can do anything. So that has not changed. It's just that I did not understand men. I didn't understand how to tell whether a man was going to be a long-term partner, a good husband material, or not. And I know there are a lot of gay men out there that struggle. That's probably why they're not as forthcoming about their feelings, and they feel like they can marry the gay away, just like people feel they can pray the gay away. But the thing about it, that everybody will tell you that's been married, whether it's a heterosexual male or a homosexual male, whatever is broken is magnified when you get married, or whatever is unresolved is magnified. So if you all were having some doubts, some issues, some struggles, trying to suppress your way through, pray your way through, you know, fast your way through, whatever, before you even got married, I think it set you up for failure to think that marriage was going to be the end-all, be-all. And I think for a lot of people that have gone to church, that has been the difficulty, kind of finding the balance between your faith and the reality that's staring you in the face. My faith has not changed, but I am much more knowledgeable about the human condition and about men in a way that I wasn't before. Because had I been this knowledgeable, I would not have married him. No way I would have, because it wouldn't have been a marriage. We talk about this often, Bonnie, that one of the major things that sets a marriage different than any other relationship is the intimacy factor, of which sex is an integral piece. So if you want to be platonic with someone, you don't have to marry them. Because by virtue of you marrying them and making those vows, you're telling the other person, you're promising your fidelity to that other person. And if you are putting yourself in a situation where you're resenting them from wanting to be sexual with you, that to me, that's not a godly marriage at all, and that's, I don't believe that's what God intended for marriage in the first place. So, you know, it is a slippery slope for many that have grown up with the thinking that I did, and with you know, the upbringing that I did. I'm just so grateful that even in my growing relationship with myself and with the source of all things, whom I call God, that He has shown me that, you know, he has helped me through this difficulty to come to the place that I'm at. And that is the realization that my ex-husband could not have done anything different than he did. He was gay. And his denial did not make it any different. It did not make it any different.
Maybe to him it did, but it didn't in the long run to you, right?
Yeah. No,
a lot of these
didn't.
Men can talk themselves out, and they can justify it however they want. And, in fact, you know, it's interesting because I have my newsletter coming out in a few days, in which I'll talk a little bit about your new seminar that we'll discuss in a few minutes. But when I'm writing this newsletter, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, I have a new saying, and I really believe this. You know, how they always tell you, don't give up, don't give up. You know, because so many of our women don't give up, you know, because they feel like if you give up, you're a loser. Mine is give up and win. You know, give up and win. Just give it up. I mean, why are you fighting it? And it's so interesting because when I have women who come to me and they tell me that they have suspicions, and I'll say, well, what are your suspicions? And they come to me with things such as, well, he's looking at gay porn, there's gay pop-ups, he's on Craigslist, and, you know, so I say, well, that should be enough to show you, that should be enough to show you. So I talk about how everything they have an answer for, I say gay porno, they say pop-ups. I say Craigslist, men for men, they say curiosity. When they say gay hotlines, they say bored. Gay chat rooms, all men have to have things in common and he doesn't have many friends. Caught to listening in the park and arrested, mistaken identity. Condoms and sex toys in a hidden black bag, fantasies. You know, like, some women will just do anything but come to terms with and say, and so in doing that, they're just, you know, they just keep that attitude of their husbands intact. You know, if they can't believe it, then how? Why do their husbands have to believe it?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. But you know what? When I look back, and I'm sure because of our experiences and everything, really the denial that we stay in about our husbands is not for them. It is for us.
That's not
true. There's something in us that we feel like if we cannot justify it, that we blame ourselves. And it's easier to be in denial than to blame whatever that thing is that you don't want to face, whether it's feeling like you're a failure, feeling like you're not attractive enough, feeling like whatever. It's like it's the denial is somehow, it's a payoff. There is some reason, there's something that staying in denial is doing to make you feel better about what you're afraid of within yourself. It's never about the other person. It's always how we feel about ourselves. And that, to me, the simple fact that we hold so much to it is an indication that we need a deep healing in our self-esteem. Because, you know, whether the man is gay or not is no indication of our worthiness for love.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us make it the deciding factor, or make it a contingency of whether we're lovable or not. And that he did not do to us. That he illuminates, but that he did not do to us. And so, you know, that, I think
that's
that
very beautifully, and that is absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, it's us protecting us, you know, because
exactly.
It's something that we can't deal with.
Exactly.
Whether we feel it's our failure, or whether we feel that, you know, we've done something wrong, or we're not
mm-hmm.
worthy enough to have somebody better than this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why I say sometimes I just never quite understand. With self-esteem, I know it's such a major deciding factor in how your life will, you know, play along.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never understand why some people's self-esteem is so low and other people have not low self-esteem. They just have no self-esteem. And they're
mm-hmm.
willing to take so much from unworthy men. And I'm not just talking about gay men. You do life coaching, so I'm sure you see this, you know, for all
yeah.
kinds of women. Right?
Yeah, some of this is, yeah, it's like for some women, a piece of man is better than no man at all. You know,
mm-hmm.
the fabric of our attractiveness and femininity and self-value and self-esteem has been so ripped to shreds that we look for validation from men, and it doesn't matter whether he's gay, it doesn't matter whether he's a cheater, it doesn't matter what. A piece of man is better than no man at all. And that saddens me so much because I've been there before. And that's why
mm-hmm.
I can speak to the self-esteem issue, because I know I'm talking pretty smart and pretty straight right now, but this is 55 years. And I am married to the love of my life.
I'm going to ask you a question. Like
55 years, at 55 years old.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, you're like a decade younger. Well, I'm 8 years younger than me. But when I was growing up, and even though we grew up in very different places, you know, I'm from the north, you're from the south, different families, but my whole concept of growing up is that if I am to be validated as a woman, I need to have a man who will love me. Now, I'm not sure if those perceptions came from all those fairy tales I was reading, like Snow White and, you know, Sleeping Beauty, that they always had to have Prince Charming, or otherwise, you know, their lives, they weren't feeling like they could survive it on their own. Now, when you were growing up, did you have those same concepts that in order to be fulfilled as a woman, you had to have a man?
Oh, yeah, I grew up on the wonderful world of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Walt Disney, you know, that wonderful world of Disney used to come on every, I think it was Saturday night. And so I grew up on that, and soap operas. My mom would sit us in front of our black and white TV, you know, the one with a little, your arrow in the back is a hanger, a coat hanger.
Mm-hmm. That's what I have.
And we would watch The Guiding Light and The Edge of Night and Days of Our Lives, and we would look at Search for Tomorrow. These were all soap operas. So between
mm-hmm.
watching soap operas and watching The Wonderful World of Disney, in my lonely little heart, because even then, even as a little girl, a middle child, and parents that were always away working, I felt lonely and I felt invisible. And there were, and like I said, even though ours was a Christian home, it was a very dysfunctional, quote-unquote Christian home. And so
mm-hmm.
there was all this crazy, I mean, just crazy all the time. And it wasn't blatant. From the outside, we seemed like the most wonderful, adjusted, beautiful young lady. But, oh, my God, behind closed doors was emotionally wrenching. And so there was this part of me, especially when my dad started drinking a lot and I was old enough to notice, there
mm-hmm.
was this part of me that longed for normal, longed for love. And even though that was a genuine, I think, longing, you know. But I think in my little mind, the soap operas and the Wonderful World of Disney represented love to me. And so I grew up with this hope that a man would love me and we would have a family. And that was even when I was a little girl. So, yeah, I grew up with the desire for love, but, of course, because of what was set before me that seemed like love, I, too, was looking for the perfect man that's going to swoop in on the white horse and rescue me from my loneliness and my being invisible and give me a sense, and I'd be the preferred one. You know, I'd be the preferred. I'd be the wife. He'd love me. He'd want me. And we'll have a home and the kind of family that I dreamed of having.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it looked like, but I certainly wanted it.
Me too. Desperately. Desperately. And because of that reason that I was desperately looking for it, I became desperate as a woman.
Yeah.
And I had a number of very bad choices in relationships. You know,
yeah.
I had, you know, marriages before my gay husband, so I'm saying it wasn't just him. I was so happy to find somebody to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody
mm-hmm.
who would be handsome on the outside. They were always crazy on the inside.
Yeah.
They looked good. And, you know, I felt good. And even though a lot of times it was a very unhealthy kind of love, I always felt, well, you know, it'll get better. It'll get better. You know,
mm-hmm.
not exactly what I thought I was going to have. And, of course, you know, I was very needy in some of these relationships, especially in the beginning. I was willing to settle for so little and get so little in return, you know,
mm-hmm.
from my first, you know, marriage. But then, like I say,
mm-hmm.
by the time I had my gay husband, it was, you know, I was older, you know, by a few years, and I felt more confident in myself, but I was still willing to settle for things that weren't right in a marriage. And this doesn't even have anything to do with his sexuality. I mean, this is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we mistake strength a lot of times. Like, I look at women who, I don't know if this was ever your situation, liking the guys who were the bad boys. Were you ever into that?
Not consciously. I think for me, I wanted something more than the polyester suit, big
mm-hmm.
Bible carrying, tambourine beating, Jerry Curl kind of
mm-hmm.
guy. You know, I wanted someone that had goals, and I think I always looked for not just the bad boy, but somebody who had a certain degree of swagger about them,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a confidence or a sense
mm-hmm.
of humor or that kind of thing. I was more drawn, I think, to the confidence. And it didn't matter the packaging, you know, short, tall, dark skin, light skin. None of that mattered, but it was this kind of confidence that I found very attractive in a man. You know, if he had that kind of confidence where he could talk to me and approach me or say he liked me or ask me out on a date or, you know, do that kind of initiating, I found that attractive. Bad boy, fast cars and all that, no, never. That never was the thing for me. I think the biggest attractor for me was anybody who paid attention. I was so starved
mm-hmm.
for attention that if a man picked me out from the crowd and zeroed in on me and paid attention to me, that was attractive.
Mm-hmm. And, you know,
and
that was attractive to me, too, because I didn't have really hardly any self-esteem back in those days, especially as a teenager, where I wasn't one of the popular girls, I wasn't one of the pretty girls, I wasn't a cheerleader type, I was a little chunky, and I mean, now I'm, you know, heavy, but I'm saying back then, you know, maybe I was 20 pounds overweight, but I didn't have the grace, and I didn't have the ability to, you know, dance, and, you know, I didn't have boyfriends, so I became promiscuous so I could have somebody's boyfriend, No, it was a very lonely kind of existence because, you know, it worked for me at that time because at least I felt somebody wanted me for something. I mean, that's how the story in my life was.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do also with coming from families that are not real stable. You know, mine wasn't. My father was a sociopath and, you know, my mother was young. So there was a lot of distorted perceptions about what love and family should have been about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I had the guidance to really know. And those, you know, fairy tales kept coming into my mind. Well, how come I can't be like Snow White or Cinderella and find Prince Charming who's going to love me forever? I'm not lovable enough or worthy enough. And so I started picking men who weren't worthy enough, but I was just happy to have somebody to love me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that happens to a lot of women. Do you think so?
I think so, and I think self-esteem, when we think of that, we think of one way, but in my situation, I was very confident in myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was athletic, I was musically inclined, I could play the piano by ear, I was popular in school because I was so talented. You know, I didn't have problems having a boyfriend, nothing like that in high school. I think the issue is and I really have thought about this with my own journey, is I think that when we've gone through some type of trauma or drama or dysfunctional type situations in our formative years, in our upbringing, in our childhood, that I think sometimes we go through different things, and it isn't until a certain type of man shows up that the tapes start playing. Because I didn't have problems telling a guy, you know, no, I'm not going to have sex with you. You know, I was a very confident, outspoken girl. So, but somehow or another, when I got to college, I think what really got me, the guy that I really was crazy about, ended up marrying somebody else unexpectedly. And when he did that, it was like something inside of me just tore in half. And I had this attitude. In my own thinking, I thought I justified and rationalized that the reason he was able to marry that other girl was probably because she had slept with him. And he probably saw me as an immature college age girl that never been with a man, and so I must have acted immature and, you know, and all that, and he was probably more experienced, and had I slept with him, maybe he would have married me too, or, you know, he would have looked at me as a little girl or whatever. So after that happened, I slept with the first guy that had been sending me love letters for about a year. I slept with him, and then it just started going with sleeping with this one and sleeping with that one. You know, if we liked each other or whatever, I would rush into sex because I felt like if I rushed into sex, then that meant they would stay with me longer. Of course, I found out that was true.
Right.
You know, and every time I did it, that's what started messing with my self-esteem. Every time I did it. So by the time I got to my husband, I was so desperate for validation as a thinking, breathing, smart woman, not just somebody to lay with and then go away, but I was looking for somebody that wanted to be committed to me. So when I met my ex-gay husband, he paid attention. He said that he was interested in me as a person, that he didn't look at me as a sex object. So it was a perfect storm. And I was ignorant. I didn't understand. I had never, you know, dealt with gay, straight issues, whatever. So it was like, my God, here is finally a man that sees me for the totality of who I am. He thinks he finds me attractive, but he's disciplined enough to want to get to know me without it being sexual. You know, he wants to marry me. And so that's what I did. Yeah.
And it made all the sense in the world. I mean, here was somebody who loved you for you, and it wasn't a sex thing. It was for Suzette, for how smart you were, for how talented you were. And you know, because we're naive, I think, when we're younger. I think we know so little about life. I mean, I know there are people who got married when they're younger, and how they've survived all these years is, I think, the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
And I think most women who get married young really have no clue what marriage is really about and the commitment it takes.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't understand it in my 20s. I was just happy somebody wanted to marry me.
Yeah.
I was just happy somebody loved me because I didn't love myself enough.
Yeah. I know that I
tell women you have to work on that. Do you feel you loved yourself enough at that time?
Well, when I got married, I was 29.
Mm-hmm.
And so... It was like my sisters had already gotten married before. Not gotten married. I was 29 years old. I don't think I would have said to you my biological clock is ticking because I wasn't really interested in having children. So that wasn't a reason for me to rush into anything because I wasn't trying to, you know, beat the clock. But there was this part of me that felt like, you know, I always wanted the fairy tale, and as I was getting older, and like I said, had those relationships after the guy that I really liked got married, they were not fulfilling. They were ones that when, you know, it became sexual, it was like it was as soon as it was sexual, lights out. I could tell just as sure they had emotionally disconnected from me long before they left. And I was tired of feeling left. All that did was just conjure back up that childlike loneliness of my parents not being there, my father not being there because he was working so much, and then the alcoholism and he wasn't there. It took me back into excruciating emotional pain. And, of course, that pain got worse as I got older and experienced loss after loss in relationships. So I think by the time my ex came, I really wasn't totally clear.
Mm-hmm.
I just was, he wanted to marry me. We got along well. He came from the same church affiliation I came out of, and I just thought to myself, whatever struggles we have, I just pray. We'll pray through it, and God's going to help us.
Did you feel you had some struggles when you were starting?
Say that again.
When you were starting off in the marriage, did you feel you were already starting with some struggles?
Yeah, well, before we got married, there were signs. I just didn't know how to read. But now, oh, God, there were so many signs. There were so many signs. Ooh, because, you
but
know...
But to be honest with you, in all fairness, why would we think a gay man wants to marry us anyway, Suzette? You know, I would tell that to women. Don't be so hard on yourself, right?
Yeah, I think for me, when I thought about him being gay and wanting to marry me, I was thinking, oh, girl, you are the cat's meow, the bee's knee, you know, bag of chips with some dip, you know. I just thought I was, you mean to tell me this man who has experienced that kind of life, that he's fallen in love with me and wants to marry me? That he wants to be with me? Oh, my God, I am really the stuff. You know,
well, I do tell women that if I would have known ahead of time, like a lot of women said, well, I did know, not about my ex, but about a previous relationship, you know, like a year or two before, right before I met him. I was going with a guy who I went with in high school. I reunited with him, you know, in my mid-20s. I was living in New York then. I was leading, you know, an organization. He had become a doctor. And we had hooked up through high school a couple times in college, but nothing really clicked. You know, I had feelings for him, but I couldn't get his emotional, you know, the emotional side of him that I needed. Well, we hooked up again after, you know, my one of my divorces. You know, you always go back to call somebody who's familiar, you know, that habit that we have. But I called him, and then we started going together. I said to him, what have you been doing the last 4 years since, you know, we last saw each other, or 5 years? And he said, well, I've had 4 relationships. 2 of them I had were with men, and 2 of them were with women. And he said, I just realized that, you know, I'm not interested in men. Now, you might say to me, how stupid could you be? I mean, you were 26 years old when you find this out. Do you think that men just had relationships with men? Well, guess what? I did. Because that was the years of sexual revolution, when everybody was trying something. You know, we were told all these messages, most guys have some kind of same-sex relationship at least once. So he tried it, he didn't like it, and he wanted me. So I felt great. You know, I must be, like you said, a special superwoman that, you know, he wants me over everybody. But, of course, it didn't work out anyway, because emotionally I just couldn't make the tie into him. And, of course, you know, 2 years later he came out, he was gay. So I would have had a different gay husband if I would have stayed with him. At least he became a doctor. I would have had really good child support, probably. When it comes to the right. But now, look. Well, I always think, you know, at least I would have come out with a decent child support, you know, status. If we actually get divorced, at least have something from it. But what I want to talk to you about is that you've gone on, you met a wonderful man. It didn't happen overnight. You did some searching, and I want to talk to women about the seminars you're going to be having. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Fantastic. Yes, in June, the whole month of June, I'm naming that the love month, you know. The whole month of June, I will be having a workshop that's going to have 4 sessions that starts on June 6th, and every Saturday in June from 9 a.m. until 12 noon, I'll be having a virtual workshop called Enough. And it really kind of came up out of just kind of came from within me when I was really seeking to think, you know, now I'm a married woman, and now how am I, you know, what is my life going to be like now? There are certain things I've built, but my energy toward them and my interest in them is not the same as it was before. So what am I supposed to do now? And I was kind of holding that up toward the universe and trying to get a feel for who I am and what I want to do at this new phase and new season in life. And so I was listening to Women on the Edge of Evolution with Claire Zammit, and I just was kind of listening to some of the different women talk about their journey and the feminine power that they were showing in their lives. And I just started kind of just thinking, well, what do I have to offer of substance? So I noticed on all their websites they offered something free that was of a great deal of substance. And so I started thinking about, you know, what do I have to offer in my now as a married woman? And I said, hope. My story is what I have to offer, and the insights that I've gained along the way in this love journey. And so I put together an audio. It's a free audio that I have called Statistics Be Darned. Statistics Be Darned. I'm having a brain fart. How I Changed the Way I Dated and Got the Man is the free audio that I have out. And then as a supplement to that, I wanted to have some virtual workshops, because I feel like for many of us, we've read a lot of relationship books, we've done a lot of talking, but a lot of women aren't in the game. And some of them want love in their lives, they're ready, they really do, but they really want it in their lives, but they're tired of banging their heads against the same brick wall and coming up, you know, short. And so I wanted to have the virtual workshop to really have an interactive workshop where we women can really talk, we can share some insight, and they can really start working on the biggest barrier to relationship success. And you and I both know it's us. It's what we think about ourselves, what we believe, what we've been taught about men. All these different things cause us to sometimes put a barrier around ourselves. And we send a message out to men that says, don't touch me, I'm scared, I'm desperate, I'm whatever. And I feel like having more confidence, that if women were more confident in who they are, they would start attracting the right kinds of men into their lives and you know, have success in relationships. And so that's my reason for putting together the workshop. Again, they are on, they're going to be in June from 9 a.m. until 12 noon every Saturday in June. And each Saturday is going to be different things that we're going to be looking at. We're going to look at one of the things I talk about in my book, Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot, do you speak male? You know, learning to be bilingual, learning a man's language, learning what he means, not just where he grew up, you know, and all that, but learning what he means when he says, I want you. Learning what he means when he says, I want to get married someday. You know, all these things that cause women to think, oh, that might he may be talking about me. And staying in relationships with somebody that is talking about one day, but they don't mean it's you. You know, mm-hmm. But we learn the difference between the way we women process and what a man really means when he says certain things. So it's going to be those types of topics that I feel like are really, really relevant, and that it's a piece of the dating world is missing, that women are going into the dating world not equipped. We just thinking, okay, different man, but we're not learning anything and not equipping ourselves to have success in relationships. And so that's what gave purpose to me putting those together. And I'm very excited to be offering this. I have a renewed sense of purpose in it. I feel really inspired. I feel like I have something to offer to the women, especially we women who are smart and we're accomplished and we're no nonsense and we're self-actualized and we deserve love too. You know, and so I just wanted to...
Now,
I'm
a little confused on how this is done. Do they call into a number once they sign up? Is it online?
Well,
you know, how does that work?
Well, honestly, I'm still trying to figure out the right platform for it. It's going to depend on the number of women. If I have an intimate group of women, then it's going to offer some different platforms we can use. But if I have a whole lot of women, then, of course, I wouldn't be able to use anyone. So I'm kind of – this is one of those things where this is my inaugural workshop, and I'm feeling my way forward. But you can trust by the time I get there, I'll have it together. I'm looking to start sending to those that register – I'll be sending out more information way ahead of the workshop starting, and I'll have all that information for them then.
Okay, so let's talk about this.
Okay.
I have a link now, a wonderful, you know, audio that I listened to that you did. It was very inspirational, and, you know, it says here that statistics be darned how I changed the way I dated and got the man. So that's what the link they can listen to for free, correct?
Yes. They can listen to that for free.
Okay. And that's very educational. I mean, it was really interesting listening to that. And I really got a lot out of that by listening to you and, like, some of the things that you were saying about sometimes we feel, you know, that there's not any good men that are left out there, but that's not true, right?
That's what rose up. I'll be honest. It wasn't statistics be darned that rose up out of me. It was more like statistics be damned. But I thought I'd soften it a little bit.
Okay.
I thought I'd soften it a little bit. But yeah, I started reading the statistics, Bonnie, and I'm looking at myself. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm over 40, and the statistics were not looking very good about that. African American woman, the statistics weren't looking very good about that. You know, that all these different statistics I started seeing, and it just, I was like, gosh, according to these, you know, just take me into a convent because it's not going to be anybody for me. But I know there's something greater than statistics, and I think a lot of women are more desperate because they're hearing these statistics of, you know, there are more women out there than men, and all these different things that we're being bombarded with are causing us to count ourselves out. And then there's some women out there that really want love, but they're afraid to even hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like with me being 55, African-American, married a gay man twice, good Lord, almost everything that anybody could do wrong I've done in my journey. And yet here I am before you with a fantastic man. And so my mantra became, I don't need everybody, just the right somebody. So statistics be darned, I'm not trying to get everybody. I'm just trying to get the right somebody, you know?
And you really worked hard at your relationship. You know, let's add that in. You found a wonderful man. But you really worked at it.
I did. I went to a relationship coach. That was after, of course, during the years of dysfunction and all that, because I kept burning out, kept having breakdowns. I was going to therapists and psychiatrists. But when I started dating later after my son, I took my son to college and I started dating seriously. And found out the terrain was so different, and I felt like a fish out of water and felt crazy. And then the people I asked that seemed to be know more about dating than I did, I didn't agree with some of their beliefs about men and about things. And I just felt like, gosh, I just felt weird, like I was in a foreign country. And so a lot of things, and I'm sure as you know and a lot of our listeners know, you might think you're doing real good as a single woman, you know, by yourself. But as soon as you start dating seriously, everything that wasn't healed, resolved, or whatever comes up, every insecurity comes up. And so those insecurities started rearing their heads, and I started thinking, this is not the person I want to be, but I don't know how to stop being that. And so I asked a girlfriend of mine for the name of a therapist, because I really felt like I was dealing with anger issues. And it wasn't that I was walking around an angry person, but whenever a guy would hit one of my triggers, I would explode. You know, and I said, wait a minute, something's wrong. It's like I got these little landmines underneath my skin that if he walks and steps on it, you know, kablam. And so I was like, no, I don't want anybody, I don't want to be that kind of person that can go off in a moment's notice just because you happen to bump against an unresolved wound. That's not fair. And it does not make any good relationship material to have this not dealt with. And so I started dealing with a relationship coach, and after a while I heard inside of my soul say, it's time to get back in the saddle again, girl. And I was like, oh, no, it's not. And it's like, no, yes, it is. You've done the work. It's time for you to get back up in the saddle. And so I started dating. I started dating again because it's like, you know, you have to put into practice what you have learned, else you don't know that you've learned it. And so it gave me an opportunity to put in practice how to resolve conflict without going off, without exploding. How to, when a guy says something, not to automatically hear it through the ears of an accusation or a put down or something similar to what has happened in my past, but to know he might not mean it in the same way, and to be able to have that discipline to ask the right questions to get clarity instead of going off half-cocked. And so I started putting those things into practice, and I also put into practice, Bonnie, showing up authentically, because I think for a lot of us, we don't really come to the table as ourselves. We send somebody to test the guy out. You know,
uh-huh.
We don't really show up as ourselves. If he says, you know, I'm not trying to get married, we'll laugh and say, well, that's okay, knowing good and well, we just told our girlfriends just the other night how badly we want to get married. You know?
Right.
But yet we do these things because we think if we show up as ourselves, he's not going to want us. And the,
mm-hmm.
and the truth of the matter, and part of what I wanted to empower women with during those workshops is to let them know, but that is the key, showing up as yourself, not your hurt self, not your ego self, not your defensive self, not any mask that you wear self, but the real you, the heart of you, the essence of you, the joy and the levity that your girlfriends get to see, that a lot of times men don't ever get to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you have that kind of confidence in who you are. And so when I went back out and started dating again, sure, I met some guys that were very attractive, but I had
mm-hmm.
I had resolved within myself, I am not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe this time. I'm going to ask the right questions. I'm going to date from a sense of self-assurance and joy, and I'm going to bring my real self to the table and be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I found in my being honest, that's when I met Robert. When I was able to bring my true self, not the hurt self, not the I'm scared he's going to hurt me self, not the, oh, I'm afraid he might be gay self, not any of those insecurities and traumas that happen as my dysfunctional me, but the more healed me, the more confident me, the more, wait a minute, I know more about myself now. Wait a minute, now I know what kind of man I'd be happy with. And now I know how to ask the questions and how to give him time to show me who he really is before I jump in the sack with him. You know, there were certain things that I had learned that I brought with me into dating this time. And I'm so grateful that that happened because now I'm married to my sweetheart, you know. And so, yeah, it was a lot of work. And I'm grateful because I feel like with the work that I had to do, that I feel like I have something of substance to offer the single women that are out there now.
Suzette, you know, I have the different topics that you're going to be, you know, talking about. And in week one, you're planning to talk about your love vision board, law of attraction is always working, and you matter. Week
mm-hmm.
two is anger distortions, when it's intuition and when it's not. Protecting your emotional G-spot. Week three
mm-hmm.
is online dating the right way, attractive out loud, decoding a man's language. And week four
mm-hmm.
is powerful femininity, dating authentically, and the universe wants to love you. So
yeah.
Are these all intertwined, or can people take separate workshops, or how is this going to work, or you're not sure?
They can do all four sessions in a package, and I'm offering
mm-hmm.
that for $149. It's a special discount that I'm offering to anyone listening to this radio show. If you, when you register, will put in Bonnie K, you can register for that amount for all four sessions. Or if there's certain sessions that you want to come to, individual sessions, then those are $50 per session. So,
do you have a Facebook on this yet or no?
No, I actually have not put it that much on Facebook, and I'll tell you why, Bonnie.
That's okay.
Facebook,
no, I was just wondering if there's some place they can go to look it up. I mean, you can write to me at bondk@aol.com. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, if they go to my website, they can find it. That's www.suzetterhenson.com, and it'll have all that information. They go
mm-hmm.
on the home page, and there's a button for them to click if they want to listen to the free audio. And even when it takes them to that page, it has information about the virtual workshop. So
I'm going to send out the link to the free audio in my newsletter this week, if it's okay with you. Because women need to hear that. And then I'll have a link to your page for, you know, signing up. But Suzette was kind enough, because my newsletter doesn't come out till the 15th. You know, to you know, her deadline was the 15th, but for our women, she's going to extend it till the end of the month if you want to get in on that special rate. And just to mention again, Suzette is a life coach. You know, she's been doing coaching for a number of years. She's very successful with the women she works with. And for those of you who are not familiar with coaching, coaching is dealing with the here and now and how you're going to change whatever the problem is that you want to deal with now. It's not going back and going through your, you know, psychological profile from the time you're three. It's dealing with problems now and having your own support team and cheerleader teach you how to have that, you know, piece of pie out of that you want, you know, so that you can get the better things in life. Or, you know, find the happiness you're looking for. So Suzette's just not somebody who found a husband doing a workshop. I mean, she's an experienced life coach working with loads of women and getting, and also men, but, you know, with women as far as getting their lives back on track. So it's a wonderful opportunity for those of you who are looking to go into new relationships. And I understand some of you aren't ready yet, but Suzette will be running them again, right?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And if there are those that aren't ready for that yet but would like to be coached through the transition, you know, the transition from being married to someone gay and transitioning through that, I offer individual coaching for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So There are many opportunities for healing out there, and I really feel like I have something valuable to offer to help.
And I certainly know you do, and everyone who listens to the show and hears you every month, they know it too, Suzette. So we've run through our hour really quickly. I can't believe it's over already. But, you know, once again, we'll be back again in a few weeks, and I'm going to send out the information for Suzette's workshop in our next newsletter. And also, if you have any questions at all, you can go to her website at SuzetteR.Hinton.com.
Actually, no period. It's just SuzetteR.Hinton.com.
Right. Okay, no dot. Suzanne R. Hinton, right?
Yeah, S-U-Z-E-T-T-E.
Not SuzetteMyCoach.com, right?
Say what now?
Maybe one day, SuzetteMyCoach.com. But if you're old like me and you can't remember things for like 7 seconds, just write to me at bondk@AOL and I'll send you the link for Suzette. Suzette, thank you so much. You know I love you. And I'm looking forward
to
next month to have you back. And to all of the women who are listening out there, have a wonderful week. Next week, we're going to have Donna Anderson with us. I don't know if you're familiar with Donna, Suzette. Donna's in charge of loveforall.com. And she has a wonderful website. She writes a lot of books. And she's a national authority on sociopaths and narcissists. So she's really great because it really opens the eyes to women of what these guys are really like who are out there, because some of them are total narcissists and sociopaths.
Yeah,
so it's good to know what we're dealing with. I know that you say there's good men left, but they're very, very few. In my book, Man Readers, A Women's Guide for Dysfunctional Men, I figure it's like 1 out of 3. And after listening to Donna, I think it's 1 out of 17.
Oh, wow.
It's not like a big... it's not like a big pool. So I'm glad you did find Robert when you did. And see if you can cultivate some of his brothers and uncles. That might be a possibility for some of our women, too. All right, sweetie.
Yes.
Well, I love you. And I'll talk to you in a few weeks, okay?
Okay.
Have a great month. And to all of our women, have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.